And welcome back. The very first piece of legislation signed by President Barack Obama in 2009 was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. It was passed following national publicity over her gender-based pay discrimination suit against her longtime employer, the Goodyear Tire Company. She sued when she learned she was paid less than men doing the same job. She tells her story in her 2012 memoir, Grace and Grit. But the battle's not over, and Lilly is still fighting the good fight. She's in town later this week for an event sponsored by the Women's Federation of St. Louis, and Lilly Ledbetter joins us by phone. Lilly, so nice to have you with us once again.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be part of the program.
I enjoyed our chat a couple of years ago when your book came out. And, you know, I have to say that this pay disparity issue is not a thing of the past, is it?
No, sir. No, sir. I wish I could say it was. We're making headway, but not nearly fast enough. The women and their families are still struggling across this country and trying to support their families and educate their children and pay the rent or the mortgage and be able to send those kids to college later. And it's not getting much easier.
Well, folks might think when they see the and read about the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act that the pay disparity would be a thing of the past. Why is it not?
Well, it's awfully hard to get any laws passed or changed. The equal pay law, as you know, passed in 1963, and there's never been any updates to that law. And actually, the paycheck fairness, I was in the Senate balcony both times. The last two times it was voted on, and every Democrat senator voted for it both two times, but not one Republican would go across the aisle and vote for it. And as you know, in the Senate, you have to have 60 votes to carry something forward. And, you know, this, what I'm talking about, you and I now, this is not Republican and it's not Democrat. It belongs to everybody. It belongs to the businesses and the American families. It's everybody's problem.
And to a large degree, I guess it has to be solved state by state. I know a number of states are dealing with the issue. California comes to mind most recently. They have a pretty good fair pay law in the books now.
That's true. And Oregon has just passed a Lilly Ledbetter bill. And actually, California passed the Lilly Ledbetter bill back in around probably 2010. But the governor at the time, Arnold Schwarzenegger, he vetoed it. So it couldn't become law then, but they've upped their pay now. And Oregon's just passed a bill, and I understand New York. New York's real aggressive. And there are a lot of states who make sure that if you do have contracts in their states, that the women and the minorities are treated fairly and equitably by all federal laws.
Well, let's take a moment, just for the benefit of our audience who don't remember the details, what your situation was with Goodyear. I mentioned it in the introduction, but this went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Fair Pay Act, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, actually came out of a Supreme Court defeat for you, didn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I never got a dime, never got a penny, and I never will get any. In fact, the lower federal court gave me $3.8 million in the award, but of course the appeal, and then five justices ruled against my case in the Supreme Court. They did not follow precedent like two of the new Supreme Court justices had said in confirmation hearings. And then Justice Ginsburg read her dissent, and she challenged Congress to change this grave injustice back. She said, people don't stand around water coolers discussing their pay. And even if you knew someone was making a little more money than you, might not mean it's based on discrimination. And she said, it's time to put this back to where it was. So it took 18 months, and Democrats and Republicans worked together. That's one thing I'm extremely proud of today and will for the rest of my life, that this was sponsored, co-sponsored with Republicans, Democrats, independents, everybody in the Congress, and passed into law. And it put the law back to where it was prior to the ruling in my case. But I still never got any money. But once that ruling came out in the Ledbetter v. Goodyear case, it was no longer about me. It was about every American family across this nation.
Well, the crux of your suit certainly was about money, but was about the fact that you had been paid unfairly for a great many years. And in order for your suit to have legs, if I can put it that way, you would have had to file within 180 days of the time you started with this pay disparity.
Well, they came up with some technicality with the equal pay law, the Title VII, to rule against mine. But basically, what the law had been interpreted, and you know, every law is not strictly black or white. A lot of times they have an interpretation. And of course, Chief Justice Roberts said in confirmation he would adhere to all precedent.
Yeah.
But he didn't in my case. Because the precedent had been, I would have won in the Supreme Court. I should have gotten that award. But with the technicality that they pulled out, caused a lot of people, even handicapped people, having problems. Other people having problems because judges across the nation was using the 180-day rule in a lot of things, not just pay equity. And this is what was so critical. And the outcry across this great nation was tremendous, and it still is today. That's one of the reasons that I continue to do what I do, to educate the public and try to make sure that every person understands that they must get what they're rightfully entitled to under the law.
You know, you mentioned the political component a few minutes ago, and I'm looking at my notes here, and I noticed that Carly Fiorina, who of course is running for president on the Republican ticket in the primaries, basically said that the Ledbetter Fair Pay Act was just an act of tokenism. What's your response to that?
Well, she needs to go around the country talking to some of these lawyers and medical doctors and medical surgeons. There's a medical female doctor in New York that collected over $2 million from the state of New York because the college she was teaching at was paying her a third of what they were paying the white male doctors to teach. And then the hospital was doing the same, and she collected so much from them that it's sealed because they're a private institution. She needs to go around the country and start talking to some people and get her facts correct.
Are you involved politically this year?
Not so far, sir. I'm sitting on the sidelines right now.
I tell you
what I believe in, investigating every person's background to make sure they're qualified to be in the position they're running for.
Lily Ledbetter, what advice do you have for women entering the workforce today? I've seen some things that written about you, and perhaps some written by you, indicating that you might have some advice for them about how to negotiate when it comes time to talk about pay.
Yes, sir. In the past, it wasn't known for women to negotiate their salaries, but today it's really a need for women to be trained, and the American Association of University Women has a Start Smart program that they train young college women a couple of years before getting out of college to learn how to negotiate their starting pay, because as I tell audiences, if you don't get it up front, it's gone forever, because you won't make it up, because future raises are always based on a percentage, and you have to get your money up front. Another reason this is so critical, the first day you go to work, that starts your retirement. If the company you're working for has a retirement and your 401k and then Social Security, if it's around later, it's all based on what you're earning, and it goes on for the rest of your life. And if you don't get it up front, you'll never get it. It's gone forever.
I want to give the audience an opportunity to chat with you, Lily Ledbetter. If they have questions or comments they'd like to make, they can give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. They can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or they can send us a tweet at STL on air. Lily, what were the circumstances under which you learned that your pay was not the same as your male counterparts at Goodyear?
A whistleblower, someone who had come across the the pay record, which the salaried pay did not come from the local plant I worked in, but somehow they had gotten the record of the pay where I worked, and they had given me a note with just four names, first names, and the base pay. And what was so disturbing to me when I saw the amount of money was my pay was $3,727, and theirs went up high $6,000 per month, and that's just the base. That's without overtime. And each one of us in management on the front level was paid overtime because we were required to work a lot of overtime. And then the second thought I had was about my retirement, my contributory retirement, my 401k, and my Social Security. But someone gave me that note. And then after I filed a charge with Equal Employment and Goodyear was notified, I later got in the mail anonymously at my home the life evaluation sheet of the tire room managers where I worked.
Do you have a number how much you think you lost over those years?
No, sir. The Equal Employment Commission in Washington started trying to calculate it, and so did my attorneys try to. But it's an enormous amount of money because it wasn't unusual for me to work a month to 2 months straight, 12-hour shifts, without a day off. And that constitutes time and half, double time, and triple. And that's a lot of money. I took one half of a month, and I had lost around $5,000 just on a half of a month. When you start calculating even low pay, and most of my counterparts, I mean, it's unreal what their salaries would have been.
So after
my retirement is so much less.
Of course it would be. So after all of this, you really came out of it with nothing other than what you earned. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. That's exactly what I have today is exactly what I earned, and the retirement is based on what I earned. My Social Security is based on what I earned. And I have already exhausted all of my 401k, so I continue to try to live within my means and, you know, do the best I can. But there are so many women like myself that we become widows and outlive our spouses by 10 years, and they have to become dependent on their children moving into their homes, and that's not right. See, this country is smarter. We have the resources, and we have the education. We should not have these circumstances in this country. I talk to women across the country that's working two jobs Monday through Friday and a day on the weekend, and they still have to either get help from a family or do without something because they're single mothers and they can't pay all their bills, even if that.
And the gender wage gap, as I understand it now, is 79 cents. So it used to be 77. It's now 79. Lily Ledbetter,
yeah.
We have some callers. I'd like to get them into the conversation. Let's do that now. We'll start with Julie calling from Edwardsville. Julie, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you, Ms. Ledbetter. It's an honor to talk to you. I thank you for all your hard work. And my question is this. I completely agree with what you were just talking about having to do with, you know, you have to negotiate at the very beginning. My concern is this, and I know there have been studies on this, that when women do that, more often certainly than men, they're likely to be more like viewed as uppity, as, a certain word that begins with a B, you know, too aggressive, and they are more likely to either get a job offer withdrawn, or if the pool of candidates is so very small, they get dropped from the running. And that's my, you know, yeah, we can go ahead and negotiate, and you can teach us how to do that. But if there's still this mindset out there that a woman who sticks up for herself is somehow too uppity and we don't want her to work for us.
Julie, time's getting away. Let's give Lily Ledbetter a chance to respond to you.
You're right. I get you on that. But what we have to do is learn the tone and the approach that we should go into a job interview and negotiations with. And there's a time to ask about the pay, and there's a time to find out, you know, what the possibilities are for advancement in the position that you're also hiring into, because a lot of times they want to put women into positions that they're locked into a certain level and as far as they can go. But there's a tone and there's a way to talk to a prospective employer that they will understand that you're just wanting to be part of the program and have the best advantage possible for your career.
Julie, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Ivy calling from St. Charles. Ivy, go ahead.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to thank Lily for spearheading and keeping it in the press and your courage in bringing to light this really insidious problem with our whole system in the failure to see the value of women's work. And, you know, this actually goes into a lot of different areas like female-dominated careers like, you know, house care, home care for the elderly. You know, there's a lot of people that work very, very hard taking care of people, and these are jobs that I don't believe a lot of men could even do. But women do them every day, and they're struggling just to pay their bills. But what I wanted to just say is that I really appreciate you pointing out that your power with an employer in the negotiation for any starting salary to begin with is before you take the job. After that, you don't have any power anymore, and the employer basically owns you. And that's a really significant point. It took me a long time to learn that. And you're absolutely right, too, about the timing and bringing it up and also the tone in which you bring it up. It's, women, yeah, we're taught to play nice.
Ivy, let's get a response from Lily Ledbetter.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ivy. You're exactly right. And we really need to learn the system, and I tell young college classes that I get to speak with, they have everything at their power, and, you know, they can look up and Google and go online and look up prospective employers. They know what they're paying, and they do their homework before they go in. They might get offered exactly what they would be expecting, but if they don't look up before they get there and know their have their homework done, so to speak, they won't know that. But it is critical, and you're exactly right. It's like I use the example, why does the housekeeper at the hotel make less money than the janitor? Because both jobs are hard. But that usually the housekeeping makes less money than the janitors because it's male and female. And that's not right. And I still talk about, and my age carries me back to the time when they had men's jobs and women's jobs posted in classifieds. They were different. But I said, why do we talk about a man's job and a woman's job? It's a job. You've got the guidelines for the job. You got the person and the qualifications. And if that person fits, they should have it, and they should get paid accordingly.
We don't have time to take a call from Dennis in Overland, but I know he wants to say great work to Lily Ledbetter. You should be in politics. Is that something that's ever crossed your mind?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I almost got talked into it, Dennis, a couple of times. And if I had been a little younger, I think I would be, I'd probably be maybe up there being at least a representative from Alabama. And I like to see young women get into politics, local, state, and national, because Alabama only a few years ago just elected the first female ever to Washington Congress. I mean, that was the first time ever. So the opportunities for women, it's wide open. It's wide open. Look at your boards. Not very many women on boards either.
Well, we don't have much time left. I think a lot of people wish that you would get into politics because you're a tough cookie, Lily Ledbetter.
Thank you, sir. I wish I could. I wish I could. If I had another life to live, I think I would be a politician. And if I had known today what I knew 20 years ago, I would be in Washington.
Yeah, well, we'd all be a lot smarter if we knew today what we knew. Whatever. Lily Lever.
That's really good.
We're looking forward to seeing you here in St. Louis. I'll remind folks that you'll be here at an event sponsored by the Women's Federation of Greater St. Louis at the Frontenac Hilton on Lindbergh from 5:30 to 8:30 this coming Thursday. The event is titled 2015 Making a Difference, Strength Through Equality. Lily Ledbetter, thank you so much for being with us. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, and it's so good to be part of your program again. Thank you, sir.
Feel the same way. Thank you, Lily.
Bye.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the Missouri History Museum's newest exhibit, which takes a look at the history of coffee in St. Louis. Then we'll discuss disability rights and St. Louis's observance of the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.